And I think letting mistakes happen makes fewer mistakes happen.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Laura Wild, a holistic mental performance coach and founder of Sports Energy Medicine. She is a former NCAA head basketball coach and two-sport college athlete who has worked extensively with elite performers. Her work spans through the NBA, WNBA, NFL, MLB, and NCAA Final Four programs. She blends mental performance training, energy healing, and intuition to help players perform at their best. Her methods focus on regulating the nervous system and accessing flow states. She bridges science and soul in her player development approach. She has guided countless athletes through challenges like injuries, slumps, and high-pressure moments. On this episode, we go over daily habits to help players stay grounded, advice for those struggling with playing time or injuries, and how to train confidence in your players every day. Please welcome to the podcast, Laura Wild. Dr. Dish Basketball is revolutionizing basketball training with the number one selling shooting machine in the world. Our innovative systems are the only training solutions that deliver more reps, motivation, and fun, empowering coaches and players to elevate their game faster than ever before. Featuring advanced analytics, immersive game-like features, and an easy-to-use interface, our state-of-the-art shooting machines are the preferred choice for progressive teams worldwide.
Ladies and gentlemen, and all you coaches out there, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, yours truly, Doug Caputo, Alan Major here to chat it up. Today, we are joined with the former coach and the current holistic mental and performance coach, works with NBA players, works with NFL players. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Coach Laura Wild. Coach Wild, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, so glad to be here.
Yes, thank you for joining us. Once a coach, always a coach, right?
This is true.
Yep. You kept the title of coach, and especially with your history, I know you've had a great history of coaching, and we'll get into that here shortly, but no, it's great to be able to have you on and talk about this side of basketball, but at least it's nice to see that you have the background of coaching on top of the psychological side of things. So you can give us a little idea as to both ways. And then tailoring into that, being a former coach at the college level, multi, as we mentioned, Pepperdine University, you were the head coach at the University of Dallas and University of California as well. So you definitely have some great experiences and background there. But as a former coach at the college level, like, what made you segue into the mental performance side of basketball?
I think it's because of the timing. I wasn't quite young enough to do WNBA, and I wanted to do pro coaching, and I didn't see a pathway for myself into the NBA on court. Plus, I know that physically I would peter out at some point. I just felt like there was a big challenge, and the athletes I worked with needed some mental coaching. So I wanted to do it at the next level, and I found it really fascinating and fun.
Was there a certain pattern when you were coaching and then maybe thinking about crossing over into this side of it? Was there a pattern in athletes that you noticed that kind of nudged you towards that? Or was it someone that said, hey, Laura, you should really think about this side of the profession? I don't know if it was, maybe it could have been both. How did that kind of come about?
You know, what's interesting is it actually came about because when I was coaching and my players would get injured, it's like, it could ruin everything. Wow, all this work, and it's ruined because one person twisted their ankle and they're the leading scorer, our point guard. So I started working on mind-body medicine. And from mind-body medicine, I understood that injuries are emotional and mental, or at least there's that connection, right? And so I found my way accidentally into the mental side because I came through the physical healing side. And then no one wanted to hire a holistic healer in pro sports. They'd go, hey, talk to the team doctor. Team doctor would go, click. So one day I got an interview and I said, I do mental performance. And I did, but I really hadn't all the way gone into that space. And it was such a good buzzword in like 2015. So I got hired. That's the best name for me. They love calling someone a mental performance coach. It checks the box, right? And I can do that work. And I had a place where I fit. Finally, I finally fit in pro sports when I put the label on mental performance coach. So no one told me I should do it. but I was told that I shouldn't do what I was doing.
Got you. Dig into the injury thing a little bit more, because I'm glad you said that. And I think coaches sometimes can, not that they mean to, but they can inadvertently just forget about a kid when they get injured, because, and kids can feel like a ghost when they're injured, like they're there, but they're not there. So talk about how coaches can do a better job of coaching players, even though they're injured. And maybe obviously they can't, you can't coach their bodies because they are not able to do anything, but how can coaches do a better job of coaching an injured player's mind while they're still injured and keeping them engaged?
Yeah. What's interesting is when I was at the LA Clippers, I was the mental performance coach there. And when I was coaching there, I came up with this thing called the holistic return to play. So everyone's got the RTP protocol, return to play protocol. And I came up with the holistic return to play protocol because, and when someone's injured, especially when they continue to be injured, or when they get injured before playoffs or the big game, oh, I'm out second half, can't play, it's partly because of the way our psyche handles, or really doesn't handle, pressure. So I noticed that when it got, like, the game got heated, certain players would get injured and other players could overcome the injury in that second. And in my studies with holistic healing, you realize, oh, courage is linked to ankle sprains, a lack of courage. Fear is related to knees. And so I started putting it all together. And so for coaches in particular, it's really important to ask an athlete who's injured, you know, what was going on the day you got injured? You know, what else is going on for you? Because if we just lock in and look at a hurt knee and we don't pull back and look at the whole person, we're going to miss something. Because every time I ask an athlete this, they go, I had broken up with my whatever person the day before that. Oh, my boyfriend and I broke up that week and I was really stressed out, or my family got evicted. Like, whatever that emotional thing is, it can really lead to the injury. And it can lead to a moment of stress in our lives when our body is not at its best. In moments, we're most likely to get hurt. So I think coaches should really be coaching the athlete to think through the injury and to also notice, hey, are you feeling fear? Are you feeling worry? Are you sad about something? And just asking that question, even if they don't have an answer, gets the subconscious mind to start unraveling the patterns that helped the injury happen in the first place.
No, that's great. And especially like the mental side of things, I feel like that can be a huge setback for kids, especially going into a season. They did this whole prep. They're all prepared. They're like, I'm going to kill it this year. I'm working with, there's a couple kids that I've talked to recently going all summer. They're, the guy ahead of them graduates and they're like, okay, this is my shot. They get hurt. They notice this. There's this now, oh crap, what do I do? And I got to try and find a way to frame myself to be able to come back. So I guess like the big thing that I want to dig into off of that, and I'm glad you brought that this all up. What's the best way, not only for players, I guess, talking from a player's perspective, in case there's somebody out there like a player, to be able to get that confidence? Because it's, as you said, it's not necessarily the injury so much. It's more the confidence and everything that they had building up to it, the hard work you put in. So what's the best way for a player to get back into that mind state? And then how could, on the flip side, a coach help with that?
Yeah, okay. So for the player, one thing I always have my players do is get a picture of the anatomical structure of the knee. If your knee's injured and you have a torn meniscus, what does that look like on the inside of your knee? And nowadays you can Google that. And I have them start to use visualization because they've proven, right, that visualization can do something in the body. Like, the body is affected by what we see, whether it's real or not. It's just, that's a scientific fact at this point. So I have them visualize. I like to do sound therapy. So I've made a couple of MP3s that I let athletes have that helps them start to visualize the healing and also go more into, get out of stress, right? If we're in stress all the time, our body can't heal. So many athletes have to find a way to de-stress, to pull back and decompress so that they can heal. And I think using your mind, considering that practice, if you can't get out there and shoot, close your eyes and make shots. Because if you make shots, and you know, if your knees hurt, use your upper body and physically feel yourself making shots and do this stuff visually. Hear the sound of the courts, play the sound of a crowd, and imagine that you just made the winning shot. So you keep your mind active, you keep the neurons going. I think for a coach to recommend to their athlete, hey, focus on the mental game right now while you're down. You can get really far ahead. And having athletes watch moments of greatness on YouTube. I say, hey, go watch a great play that someone else made. Or if they're already famous, I get the training because it was nice to have the clippers, right? All the resources. And you can get a highlight reel of the athlete's best moments so they can stay connected to that. Because it's really important they stay connected to who they were. But here's what I think is most helpful for a coach or an athlete. You're not trying to go back to who you were before your injury. You're actually going forward to the next level version of yourself. Because if you hurt yourself because you had this unrecognized fear, a lack of self-awareness, overly worrying about something, you don't want to go back to the person before that. The injury lets you move forward. The injury is a hurdle you leap over. You don't try to go back to who you were before. And that's really important for athletes as they heal to not have this idea of that person I was back before this happened. It's like the next version of myself that I'm about to be. And that can help, that can speed healing. And so I think it's really important that coaches and athletes both think about that.
Yeah, I love you said that because I've always tried to encourage players. I attended the practice the other day. A friend of mine is a head coach, but I was, and one of his players came by and we just started chatting. And this kid has pretty much missed the entire summer since like mid-May, late May. He got injured, missed the last 2 months. And I said, how's it feel now that you had to shift your, basically now you had to compete against the injury. So the rehab becomes the competition because you can't get on the floor. Right. So you actually have to shift your mind to this is my competition now. So that's the physical approach. And then the mental approach is looking at the game from a, through the lenses of all 10 eyes on the floor because you're sitting back watching everything. So he'd mentioned he had a whole new perspective and this kid was a point guard. And so he mentioned he had a whole new perspective now looking at the game because he couldn't be out there, but he had to see how everything fit offensively, defensively. He had to, you're listening to what every coach is saying now because you're not just worried about what's my deal. Let me stay in my lane. I'm glad you mentioned that about coaches just being more intentional about just continuing to coach players when they're injured, especially a long-term injury. If a kid's going to be back in a few days or a week, that's different. But especially when it's long-term, you really don't want to let them fall by the wayside.
Yeah. They can get so much more, like, when you're sitting out, like you mentioned the young man that was sitting out, you can get so much more out of the moments you sit out because then even if you want to be results-oriented, you cannot be. And so if an athlete can learn to get present and not always be thinking about if the shot's going to go in, if the pass is going to get there, which is why it's so hard to visualize because when I visualize, all my shots go in. I can dunk the basketball. Actually, I can double dunk with two hands when I visualize. I'm really good. And you should be too. Like, all of you should be incredible. What's that? The plastic man or stretch man? Like, we all should
be. Yeah. Stretch Armstrong. Yeah, the toy. Yeah.
I'm not myself, but we all should have visualizations. I make athletes do superhuman mental reps. Mental reps. Those are great. But let's do superhuman mental reps where they get silly with it because – if you're really going to do something huge, you have to be able to think in an outrageous way. And it has, we learn faster, right? When we do it in play. And so it's one thing to learn when we study or go through the reps, but if we can get playful with it, it sticks. So sticky learning happens when you visualize silly stuff. And so I love to have the athletes go, have a 1,000,000-point game. Go have a 1,000,000 point game in your visualization. Your left brain is, I'm leaving right now. And so your brain, your imagination goes crazy. You can get through it, and now you're in a state of more joy, more play. You're a higher frequency athlete, which means you're not in stress, fear, self-pity, apathy. You can get higher. But the better you are in your, as your mindset, the faster your body heals. You heal faster in joy than you do in anger. And so it's really important that they have this idea of what they might be doing to themselves if they're overthinking the injury, that they're too frustrated, right? So there's a silver lining to these things.
Yeah, because the right brain is more like systematic and planning. And then the left brain is joy and excitement. It's the contrast, correct?
It was the opposite. The left brain.
Left brain systematic, then the right brain is, got it.
Right brain's beautiful. It's the right brain's ADHD and the left brain is an engineer.
There we go.
Okay, so now I understand where half my conversations come from. Then. No, and I have to say, when you said mental shots, right, like, anybody listening to this, every single person who has touched a ball and shot around the backyard, you can tell me right now if I'm lying to you, but I know I'm not. You have had the mental clock going down. You've shot a shot, 3, 2, 1, see it go up, go in, game winner. Everybody's hit a game winner in their backyard, right? That's just a staple. Yeah. But then off of that, I know Kobe and MJ, I'm pretty sure, were like two people who used to do mental reps before games and stuff. And it's a phenomenal thing to be able to do. Now, sitting there and having the time and the patience to be able to actually think and memorize it or go through it in your head, probably the most difficult part, to just to iron everything out and keep everything, all the other voices and noises in your head. But to flip now, say we drop the injury and we just go more towards players bouncing back from a bad play or a bad game, or say somebody's in a slump. If we just drop the whole injury portion of it, what's the best ways that a coach can maybe work with somebody if there's something in practices, if there's something, or just maybe having a conversation with them? What's the best way for players, or excuse me, for coaches to help players bounce back from that bad game, from that bad play, from that bad stretch of games?
There are two main things that I do. One is I love to get team, whenever I work with the team, I have them do breath work. And I actually worked with one of the top NCAA teams last year that shall not be named. And we got to the point where the coach would say, go do your 4-7-8 breath breathing. And it was funny. It was almost like a punishment. So the guy would come out of the game, whatever guy it was, when he's upset or he had a bad stretch, and coaches say, go do 4-7-8. And what that means to that athlete is 4-7-8 breathing, which is made famous by Western medicine, Dr. Andrew Weil. So you breathe in for 4 seconds, you hold for 7. And when you hold for 7 seconds, you imagine your energy expanding, you're back to your game. And then you breathe out for 8 seconds out of your mouth or nose, but you breathe in through your nose for 4, hold for 7, exhale 8. And if you do that 3 times, it'll shift everything. The other thing I like to do, there was one more thing I was going to tell you about that I like to do with athletes. Oh, I know. When the game gets crazy, we can do palms down. Instead of palms up, you just have this like palms down, and it settles you, right? So you teach athletes, and pretty much the teammates will yell at that some point, palms down, and instantly, oh, I got to bring it down a notch. Let me chill. So I think when coaches add breath work, when the players are upset or bothered, it can really help. Oh, also, I like them to do a replay, a do-over. Depending on the situation, right? If it's the end of the game, you have them go back to the few seconds before it happened, and they physically walk through doing it again, but without a basketball, right? In the beginning. So if it was 3 seconds left, you got the ball, you took one dribble and you shot and you missed, set the clock up again. We're going to redo this. We're going to erase this from your mind. So we're going to redo it. You can't just redo it once. You got to redo it 3, 4, 5, up to 10 times, so that now their subconscious mind remembers a make and success more than the miss. So when the moment comes later, they've actually practiced and they've drawn this new, think about it, in the forest, if you make a pathway, right? So they've worn down the pathway to the make at the end of the game, instead of the miss being the thing they can only think about, because people get obsessed, right? They replay it. If you're going to replay it, no better make. Yeah, replay the make over and over again, but do it physically, because if you can cross the planes of horizontal, vertical, diagonal, because you're moving, this is going to actually planted in your subconscious mind. This is like scientific neuroscience stuff that we know to be true. I'm going to have some techniques I teach people that they're a little more complicated, some techniques where they really do get out of that rabbit hole they've gone down of how they think they ruined their whole career because they had a bad game. There's a lot of pressure.
Oh, you know what? You just literally, like, the end of what you said you read my mind, because I had a question on, obviously there's 440 players in the NBA. Whoever you would call the least talented player in the NBA is a great player by world standards. What was the biggest challenge you ran into? Because obviously they're in a highly pressurized environment, highly results-based environment. So sometimes you can skip steps in the process part just by trying to get to the results. But were there one or two common thread challenges that you ran into when dealing with NBA players, just from the standpoint of everything we're talking about? What were there maybe one of the two biggest, couple of big hurdles that they across the board seem to deal with?
Well, one thing I would say is players are obsessed with whether or not they're going to get traded when it's time to get traded. Like it goes chaotic when we're getting close to a trade deadline. So I really teach players that and with the portal being open now, it could be the same, even though they could choose to leave. You have to find your home team, like in your heart. So I love the woo-woo. Hey, your heart, your home team is here, not out there. And so you have to stay within yourself as you're looking at your game, right? And so that this is where you know you're always safe here. One other thing I noticed with NBA guys in particular, like you said, outcomes-based, because they look at that as a way to get paid. So first, I remind them to rely on their work. And I say, you've probably done more reps than almost any human on the planet. And the number 440 is really key here, because even the lowest five talented, or the guys with the least playing time, right? It's not always the same, on an NBA team, have done more work than most humans on the planet. And so, right? It's like, you realize how elite you are. So I like to enroll them on purpose. I go, you're in the NBA? Amazing. What, you're in the NBA? And I'm really silly with my coaching, and it works for them. I go, do you realize you're in the NBA? And so you got to look in the mirror and do these things for yourself, whether or not you made it to the NBA yet, because you want to plant the seed in your subconscious mind. Because in neuroscience, we know that if you plant the seed and you visualize it enough times, your subconscious mind believes it's true. And in the quantum world, this collapses other possibilities, and it begins to create your pathway to an inevitable result. However, you also want to be present. You want to play present, be where your feet are. And so to me, breathwork is a great way to do that. Sports meditation, visualization, so that you can be on the court wherever you are. Rely on your work, because you've done the work already. I know you've done the reps because you're here. Because I had a kid who told me he wasn't good enough to be in the NBA. I'm like, but she just went first round. I know, but I don't know. Like, I don't know why. I said, someone else knew why. People who know more basketball than why. So we created this identity for him, like an alter ego name. Kobe had Black Mamba, right? So every athlete should create that identity. It's not the nickname someone gave you when you were 5 years old, because that's the shrunken set version of you. You need the higher version of yourself, the highest version of you. You give it your alter ego name, and you imagine stepping into that presence. My alter ego name is Astrid Getty. She's some really wisdomful old woman who's a philanthropist, and she knows a lot. And so anytime I have to do something a little scary, I step into her, right? And so give us confidence. If you can have the confidence of that part of you created, you're completely unstoppable. But you got to get in the mirror. You got to tell yourself these things, even if you don't believe them, because your subconscious mind will listen. They'll file them away. And when the going gets rough again, if you've told yourself in the mirror, I am unstoppable 1,000 times, and things get rough, that little seed you planted has now begun to grow. And you might be able to see that as you're not sure whether or not you're unstoppable. Like, you'll, it's there, it's planted inside of you. So it's really important here, right?
Yeah, no, I can see that. As for guys at that level, the self-thought and the self-talk, and I guess one leads to the other, maybe, but that's, I can see that being a major thing just from one day to the next, because it's such an ever-changing lifestyle at that level. And you just never know from one year to the next, or like you said, the trade deadline, or somebody's on a 10-day contract or a two-way, and how's that go? And just finding the ways to stabilize yourself mentally has to be a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
Now, is there any habits, routines, anything that you have found that coaches at that college, at that NBA level, because again, they're on the road consistently, they're doing a lot more, there's a lot of different conversations you got to have at different times, so there's a lot to juggle with those positions, but is there any like daily habits or routines that you have noticed those coaches step away from their career for 10-15, whatever it might be, any habits that you have noticed coaches do to help themselves stay grounded and locked in through a season?
Yeah, so I worked with Doc Rivers at the Clippers, and I also worked with Ty Lue. I know a bunch of other guys just from being in the league, and I love to give them MP3. Here's a breathwork MP3. For 3 minutes, you can step away, like you said, and just sit for 3 minutes. And it can actually change the way your brain operates. It can allow you to be in rest and relax, which obviously is the opposite of fight or flight. And so breathwork is a really simple one. Doc Rivers was really into meditation. I think meditation is amazing. Not all guys will do it. The guys who say, I can't meditate, my brain's too busy, we love to say, then you have to meditate more. That's how you're breathing. But breathwork is really important. I think journaling is important too. And some people say, I don't know what to journal. Then pick up, do you know how to write? Okay, then write whatever you don't, write that. I don't know how to journal. And then next thing, writing, I am unstoppable. I am an NBA champion. Because we really have to create the pathway for ourselves. It's great to say, I don't care what happens, but you still have to have a strong intention. And you set that strong intention, and maybe you don't know the pathway to that, but I think it's important to have a big, huge goal. Because if you're coaching, I know this, I was coaching. I was working 90 hours a week, as most coaches do, and you're trading your life for your team. Your whole life is traded for this team, for this goal. It better be big. It better not be win 5 games. It better be NCAA champion. I get to the end, whatever it is, and you don't have a plan B. Stop having plan Bs, coaches. You don't need that. You need a plan A. So that you don't have this small little part of you that's excused from not getting the big goal or dream. just, you got to go for it so hard. And so the coaches who do that, who are like on fire for it, huge goals, breath work, they're doing their whatever it is, meditation and being curious and learning all they can. Those are the ones I find that adjust the best. And the ones who are chill. Okay, like that was a game and they put it away. Like in the NBA, you got a short memory. And so you got like the NBA, right? Like I thought the guys would be upset. I'd be on the team playing after he had a loss. I'd be like, oh man, Pacers kicked our butts. I was on the aisle seat. I'd look up to the front of the plane where the whole team was. They'd be playing cards and I'm like, aren't you guys upset? And no, they weren't. it's a job. And you know what? 14 is the new 19 now with NIL. If you're 14, you're 19 from 3 years ago, because now you've got a job, you can make money, and you have to be looking at this as a career. And a lot of parents don't even realize this. I'm like, no, get your sophomore mental training so he can get $800,000 as a freshman or $4 million, whatever it is. So we've got to think about
that. No, it's funny you mentioned meditation, actually, and I'm not trying to do a commercial or PSA for Headspace, but I have the Headspace app on my laptop or my iPad. And that's 10 minutes a day, literally, religiously. And it's made a huge difference for me, just because, again, you have to get in a quiet space. You have to get by yourself. And it's amazing how focusing on your breath, it shows you how much mind activity we actually have, because that's usually what's interrupting you focusing on your breath. But it's made a huge difference for me. I would highly recommend it to anyone that doesn't do anything. But the Headspace app is great because it's guided. It's a person taking you through it, like a voice guided meditation. And yeah, it's been great. But you said a key word in there, just the being intentional. And I think that's something that coaches can definitely improve on when coaching themselves, being intentional about whether it's meditation. It's funny, Doug and I literally, before you came on, unbeknownst to you, were talking about journaling. We were talking about it before you jumped on.
I've been looking up at one point for different ones, and I was looking to see. I was like, I think this would be something good to start doing, even if it's for a couple months. So me and Al were talking about it, and then you mentioned it, and I was like, that's interesting. Yeah.
I'm like, you got to get a moleskin. And by the way, you got to use Headspace. And one day, I want you to take off the Headspace and do your 10 minutes without any guide. And it's really hard to do. And the Headspace, I recommend that too. I think that's the one the NBA is partnered with. So it's so great to start there and to use that and make a habit, because if you can make a habit, it's amazing. And then, like you said, the intention is so important, and you have to set an intention. Every day I'll do meditation, no matter what. Every day, breath work. And I have a lot of free stuff on my website and that people can use. And I think having the tools around you is important, which is why the app makes you have to do it. Without the app, you might not do it. But yeah, I love Moleskine journals. I got stacks of them. I journal about everything. I write all my goals down. I go read them later. Oh my gosh, I got that one. But I had put it on a shelf and I forgot. So writing it down really matters. Like journaling is the key to that, right? So journaling might be writing your goals down, but it might also be letting those thoughts, because when you meditate, the thoughts, you're getting in your own way. And when you journal, it's like you're writing the things down that want to hit your head right when it's time to meditate. All of a sudden you forgot to load the dishwasher or whatever, push start. When you I forgot about this and this. And people don't realize, like, when you're meditating, the goal is not to not have thoughts. The goal is to notice that they're just thoughts. Like, oh, I'm noticing thoughts. So you can stalk your thoughts when you meditate, which during the day you might not. You're just operating unconsciously and you don't realize the thoughts that are there. And it's good to see them. Eventually, you'll get rid of so many thoughts. You can sit in pure silence and bliss for minutes on end.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, it's been a huge help. Dougie, there you go. You got validation on the journaling thing right there. So any questions you had, it's over with. You're doing it.
Yeah, sold. No, and then I wanted to ask off of that too. Like one of the things, and it sounds like you already answered it, so don't feel like you have to go reiterate, but confidence, especially as we were talking before, players going through those slumps, those down periods, having a bad gameplay, whatever it might be, like you feel that these are all different things, like journaling, the sitting down, meditating, having a visualization. Are those all different ways for a player and a coach to all help essentially train that confidence in yourself, or I guess for lack of a better way to put it, like training confidence like a muscle of your body? If you want to get the work in, you got to get the reps in and kind of form more of a daily habit. Is this what you believe?
I'll totally believe that. Like, I think if you're doing your reps, you're going to be confident if you know you did the reps. If you know you cheated yourself, you can't be confident. And if you're doing it for yourself, it's hard to be confident. But if you show up like, I'm going to serve my team today because I don't feel confident, but I'm going to pour into my two guard. I'm going to pour into my big guy, our big man. If you can actually put everything into the others around you and go to a high-level service-minded game, then confidence isn't even important because to me, it's almost like you're channeling service. And if you're trying to get your guards the ball so they can get great shots up, like how can you really not be confident? Put it on them. Focus on those people that are around you. I want to make sure my coach has a great coaching career. And I think confidence, to me, it's really mental. Like, how do you be mental resilient? Because you're supposed to not feel confident sometimes, but then you actually bounce back from it. So the idea to me really is when I don't feel confident, I do it anyway. And I heard someone say the other day that I love this. He said, I may not be motivated, but I'm disciplined. And to me, confidence comes from the discipline. And I think if we have that, yeah, I think that can really help. And I think getting in the zone helps, right? There are all these other things that I love to teach. Get in the zone every time. You're not playing the game. You're an instrument. You're an instrument for great basketball, like a saxophone. The great basketball flows through you. You don't need confidence. You're just going to surrender. And you put the work in so you can surrender, right, at the highest level.
I love where you're going with this because I think as coaches, we can sometimes hinder players' confidence in our mistake response. So obviously we want players to have great mistake responses, but sometimes either through what we say, our voice, our body language, our mistake response to their mistakes creates a certain mistake response for them. How can coaches do a better job? Because when things are going in the heat of the moment and you're going from one possession to the next, there's just not time to hang on to something that's already gone. So getting to that next play, like how can coaches or what would you recommend coaches do to be better mistake responders or first responders to mistakes, for lack of a better phrase?
You're the first responder, coach.
Okay. Yeah.
One thing is when I had this thing I carried around back when paper was okay to have, like it is how to motivate a whale. And there was this article, maybe it was Forbes magazine. I don't know. I still have copies in my file cabinet, how to motivate a whale. And it was like, when you train a whale, you train it to swim across the bottom of the pool and you put a broomstick. And when it trains across the pool, you give it a treat. And then a whale can swim across the bottom of the huge pool or whatever it is. And so you lift it up a little bit until the whales, and there's politics here, right? So I'm not saying anything either way. But when you train a whale to jump over a stick that's at the bottom of the pool, you give it a treat. To me, putting your focus on the good things the athlete does, it's almost like when you have a three-year-old around, you don't acknowledge the bad behavior. You over praise the good behavior and you get so excited. And when I used to drive my athletes nuts when I was a coach, I was like, we're doing this. We're going to follow Dick DiVenzio. We're doing this. And so I was really annoying because I was so passionate and I was so into it. And I was like, here are these things we can do as a team and we're going to be whatever, connected and spiritual. So I love to have my team, whenever a mistake was made, we couldn't have an audible sigh. Dick DiVenzio says no audible sighs, meaning a mistake is made. And even if you can't hear it, the player on the court feels it. So we were not allowed to have an audible sigh because that drops the energy. Oh, so right, if a mistake's made, the team had to jump up and cheer, which would shock the other team the first couple of times. And if you made the mistake yourself, you had to call a teammate. So if I make a mistake, I go, let's go, Jennifer, let's go get down the court. And so my focus to motivating her, I would let the mistake go quickly. Basketball is a game of mistakes. I gave my team permission to make a million mistakes. I will never take you out for a mistake. I will only take you out how you respond to the mistake if it's not good, right? So I think making a mistake, like where the team will cheer themselves to the next moment, like next play speed, right? What's the next play? Get to that speed right now. And I think letting mistakes happen makes fewer mistakes happen. Because if the pressure of a mistake is there, they're going to mess up all day, especially some kids. There's some kids out there in their boots. And I would be so surprised to find out that a kid was intimidated by me. I was a young coach. I was a head coach and I was 23 years old. And I look back, I'm like, oh my gosh. I was so stupid. Hopefully I'm not alone in that. I think as coaches, we go, oh, but you remember certain kids. And I know just like I do, I know you guys remember certain things your coach said. I remember the coach who said, we're going to run suicides till I'm tired. And they'd say, we got to beat this team because I can't stand that coach. or if you could do, you're so busy trying to get rebounds that blah, 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 you're not playing defense. Like, I hear these tapes playing. So we have to be aware of what tapes are you playing for your kids? Because they'll remember it when they're
100%.
40.
100%. Oh, Mike. I can't describe to you how jacked up I am that you mentioned Dick DiVincenzo. Because, Doug, if you have never heard of this book, you got to go buy it. It's called Stuff Good Players Should Know by Dick DiVincenzo. It is one of the single greatest basketball books you will ever read. I was reading this book as a high school player.
Wow.
Like some of the stuff that it's very unorthodox because it's not just about drills. It's not just about plays. It was like the first probably the first book that got me mentally thinking about basketball in a totally different way. You have to get this book. If you don't, people listening, Rising Coaches podcast listeners, go get the book, Stuff Good Players Should Know by Dick DiVincenzo. God rest his soul. He died way too young. Yeah. But incredible basketball book.
I love that book. I give it to all my young clients. I used to have 10 copies. Now I have one copy. But I now send my 14-year-old nephew to Point Guard College because they're teaching some of the concepts. But there were things. Like one thing is, the book is written to players. And it says, if you fall down, get up. And someone said, what if my leg's broken? He said, get up anyway, you'll know. So Dick DiVincenzo is like an old school coach, but with some of the old school. I grew up that way. I'm used to it. I got screamed and yelled at, and I was okay with it. But the book is so good. It's a basketball coach or player. Our whole team read it one year. We had a box of books show up that I ordered, and the entire team read one page a day every practice. And it was a whole journey. Like, it's a great book. Yeah.
I have to say, when you said there's certain things coaches can say that stick in your mind, immediately I think of one thing I say consistently, and I don't know how people would feel about it, but my coach used to tell me all the time, you don't know how to work hard until you actually have to go that extra mile, because everybody always thinks I'm working hard. But what he would always say is, his thing would be, you'll pass out before you die. Keep going. And, you know, you're doing push-ups or something.
Thanks,
and
coach. Be like,
you're going to pass out before you die. And I'm like, that doesn't sound very convincing, but okay, I believe him. And I never passed out. So I got to say, he was right. You definitely noticed that mental barrier, especially, I forget the story, but it was a military. I'm sure one of you know exactly what I'm talking about. The guy said, all right, we're running to a certain house on a beach. And then they start running towards on the beach, and it's like a bunch of military guys. And then they end up going past the house. And then the guy's, that's the house. I thought we were supposed to be stopping. He goes, just keep going until I say something. And then the point of it is, you put a limitation on yourself that I'm going to stop at this house. And then as soon as you exceed that house, you're like, your mind starts to freak out. What am I doing? Where am I going? We've already exceeded it. What else are we supposed to do? I already put a cap on how far I was supposed to go. And then for another thing our coach used to do in the weight room was, he goes, you got 10 push-ups. You go down and do 10 push-ups, and then he'll walk over and go, okay, now give me two more. Now give me three more. Now give me five more. And exactly pushing you past that mental barrier as to, I'm now getting yourself out of your comfort zone. In
other words. The Navy SEAL stuff is so, like, real, because what they show is that and this is true, right? This fact is crazy. Your mind will let you exhaust 40% of your physical capacity on average. So you have to train so that your mind will allow you to exhaust 60% of your physical capacity, which actually puts you in elite status. So whatever you do, when you think I'm done, you're only at 40% of what's physically possible. We know this because people would walk for miles and miles. They would survive incredible things when their mind had to, right? When they went on survival mode. And I think the book you're talking about might be Stealing Fire with Stephen Kotler and Jamie Weill. That story might be from that book because it's the Navy SEALs. Stephen Kotler is the one who picked up the talk about flow in the zone first, and it could be that book, because that book tells a lot of good stories.
You just described why I go to HIIT class in every Tuesday morning, because it's 45 minutes of absolute hell. I'm talking burpees, dumbbell, you got squats, you got you name it, every type of hell that you can imagine. And the teacher's smiling at you the whole time while she's killing you.
Well,
yeah, but the idea is I want to finish that class just absolutely smashed, even though if I have to crawl to the minute 45, that's fine. But it's amazing what it's done for me mentally. because just being able to endure some physical craziness like that. But it's really amazing that we always have more in the tank than we think. I heard Nick Saban say this once, you know, that obviously trying to win a championship or do anything exceptional to the human mind is abnormal because our minds are trained to survive.
Right.
Our minds aren't trained to do something at an exceptionally high level for consistently long periods of time. So that's why high performance is abnormal, because it goes totally against what the human mind is organized to do.
Right.
I mean, we could go on and on all day about this. That's why these conversations are so cool. But
it's hard to be a goat, right? Anyone who becomes a goat has had to be delusional, crazy, ridiculous, insane.
Yes. Audacious, every word. Yeah, throw it all out there. Exactly.
Yeah, you're on the right path. I'm a basketball maniac. And like, why do you watch so many games? You know what? At some point, I noticed a pattern where I can recognize things that I couldn't recognize without thousands and thousands of hours watching, doing reps. And when someone isn't there yet, right, they can't understand. More reps creates mastery. And it feels like you mastered it until you realize, oh man, like I hadn't mastered it until I mastered it. So there are these levels, right? I think we get stuck. We think, oh, I'm so there. No, you're not there. 22 years, and then that's the magic number. 22 years of experience, often the magic number. Which is hard when you're a basketball player, because by the time you've got 22 years of experience, many of us are too old to play at the highest level. But some people get lucky and they get to play into their 40s, right? Late 30s.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy down the street from you in crypto center. Yeah, heading into year 23.
Yeah, summer league. And so I saw him in Savannah walking. He's like a 25-year-old big athlete. The way he moves, he's just so in flow. But he does all the meditation. He does the yoga stuff. He does the holistic mental performance. And I think it's so important to add that. So I add holistic to mental performance, because if it's just mental and we're just talking about it, that's not enough. You really have to understand, like, your emotions. Are you experiencing fear? Are you allowing yourself to go beyond just talk therapy? You have to get deep in and have self-talk, right? The self-talk matters. The other stuff, the holistic, the mind-body connection really matters for helping your athletes be great. And so that's, to me, that would be my contribution. Hopefully, long after I'm gone from here, that I will have helped coaches understand the mind-body connection when it comes to winning games and healthy athletes. And it's really important that we don't think that when someone gets injured, oh man, it was not preventable, it was bad luck. There's a portion of that, but there's also things we can do to train so that we have less bad luck. And so if we have less bad luck, maybe it's not really bad luck. Maybe it's just, oh, they were brewing for an injury because of these things that were going on in their lives. And so to help our athletes have like more stress-free lives, do some work, some meditation, you'll have a healthier team. Like that. We know that
sure. Yeah. And giving the injury perspective that this is like not the worst thing that ever happened to you. How can you be better on the other side of this? So you're painting these like positive things on the other side of it. The injury is one thing, but who are you going to become when this is all said and done?
Mm.
And if you can paint some positive things on the other side of that, now you're coaching them through the injury. Now they're, like you said, they're moving forward towards a better version of themselves instead of going back to what happened, being who they were before the injury happened.
It's like injury response, right? Mistake response and injury response. Those things will break a season. They'll make or break a coaching style, because a coach who doesn't handle mistakes well sometimes gets in trouble a lot more, especially nowadays. Yeah.
No, for sure. 100%.
I was coaching. So I've been fired twice. I had two of my coaching jobs. I got fired for being one of them for being a hard. Can I cuss? For being a hard nose at one job.
Oh, and then, go ahead.
I was a hard ass.
Yeah.
Someone cried. That's why I need to coach men, because I can't handle crying.
Crying in basketball.
I got to handle it too. So when I was 1 year, I was considered too woo woo because I would have my players line up against the wall, and I graded them on all these things and their basketball ability, because we had tryouts, because it was like we had a lot of kids show up on campus. And I actually had them sit against the wall, and they weren't allowed to touch the basketball. Like that, we had the date October 15th was basketball day. Not today. Sit down, put the basketballs away. And I want you guys to have no basketball today, and we're going to practice shooting. Players got upset. Like, they're just dying for the basketball. Like, why are you going to miss tons of shots right now if you pick up that basketball. Anyway, the athletic director didn't like it. And he was like, no, we don't know all this mental stuff you're doing. This is a while back. All this mental stuff, it doesn't have any place in here. Like, they need to get on the court, coach. They need to get in the reps. And I was like, the mental game is important. And he's not as important as getting in the physical reps. I showed him some studies. He didn't like that much. He's like, I don't need to see these studies from Australia. And he couldn't stand it. So he fired me. It was fine, like an injury. Great. I'm free. I can go do my own thing and go over here and do this. And if I hadn't gotten fired from that, I probably never would have gotten to the NBA. So when one time Oprah said, if someone fires you, say thank you. And I truly believe that. And as a coach, you get fired a lot. So get used to it. Thank you. Now I can go to my next level. I can reiterate who I've been. I can become who I'm meant to be. When I got hired by the NBA, precisely because of what I got fired for from the NCAA, I did not go on LinkedIn. I really didn't. I didn't go on LinkedIn and say, hey, by the way, they like it.
No gloating. No. Yeah. It's like,
I was before my time. And it's weird to say that I was before my time, but I know I was before my time because everything I did back then was considered really weird, really out there. She's off. And now the NBA has a mandated sports psychologist for every team. Come on. Like, the game is always going to evolve. And so you better be on the front end of it if you can, so that you're always going to have a job.
No doubt. And that's a great way to tie it all up too. I got to say, going from your coaching experiences to being from the psychological experiences, you've been able to see different parts of the game. And I'll be honest with you, the one thing that I really like, and I love everything that you have mentioned, because I know I geek out on this stuff all the time. I got my master's in essentially psychology, so I love this side of things. But to hear it from somebody who's been on the coaching side and all has gone through, and then talking about the experiences of being fired, I don't think that's something that a lot of people, one, will open up about. And I think it's great because you're at least giving people an idea of what the other side looks like and going through those experiences. And now they can see, okay, there was a bunch of, for lack of a better way to put it, like a bunch of shit that you went through. But now you came out on top. You're working in the working with a bunch of NBA and NFL. So it's good to be able to at least show that, okay, out of all this, there's positives that came from it.
Yeah, 100%. Just, I always tell young coaches, keep your head up because this is a long journey. And, you know, this it's a pothole. When you get fired, it's a pothole, not a cliff. It's literally a pothole. Rename all those big, huge things that when you're in your 20s and 30s, you go, oh my gosh, pothole. So life's a lot. Once you know it's going to be hard, you're better off, right? Worth it.
That's great. Well, no, thank you for sharing all that. Is there anything else anybody wants to throw in? Any final comments?
I just want to say thank you, Laura, for jumping on. I know this was a quick turnaround when I threw it at you last week. So thank you for just carving out the time to visit with us. I think this is, if coaches really focus on themselves, their players are going to benefit from it. And whether it's our mental talk or our self-talk, how can, you know, if we put the betterment of players at the forefront of everything we do, we can't lose. And everything you said today was so on point. And it's great. It'll be great to get this out into the airwaves for our listeners as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. If anyone needs to reach out to me, I know my information will be here. And just remember that you are unstoppable.
Yeah, please do. If you, Dougie, but should we have her maybe put her, if you want, just the best way to reach you or contact you, if you don't mind.
Okay. If you like free stuff, meditation, MP3s, or breath work.
I think anyone listening, throw us in there. Nobody's going to say no to free stuff. So
yeah, sure. It'll be thecosmicarena.com. And then my website's Laura M, as in Mitchell, WILDE.com. And then I'm pretty responsive on Instagram as well. But I love communication. I love collaboration. And I love to mentor and make sure that you guys have all the resources you need. I'm definitely a serve. So I'm happy to serve if I can.
Yeah. Thank you. This was awesome. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And like I said, to be able to share all these experiences is great. I already looked up Cosmic Arena. I'll look more into that here. And then if there's ever anything we could do to help you out, thank you. But for everybody out there, we appreciate you all for tuning in. And that does it today for another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. For Doug Caputo here, Alan Major, all you coaches out there, keep working and keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all soon. Take care.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. Thank you.